It is hour number three of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. In mere minutes, I am hosting an Austin food and restaurant roundtable with a couple of special guests. First, though, need to let you know that John Reichel is behind the glass. I am Trey Elling, of course. Chad Hastings is on vacation this week. That's allowing me the flexibility to do something a little bit different on these airwaves all week long. And that does include one of my true passions in this world. Yeah, I'm on sports radio, but I probably, if we're being really honest about things, maybe with the exception of Texas Longhorn football, I love talking food and restaurants a whole lot more. It's why I have welcomed a couple of guys in studio today to talk about food, talk about restaurants, which I think is a very important conversation considering what we've all been through over the last 15 months. So without further ado, let me welcome Statesman food critic, food editor, Matthew Odom to the program once again. Matthew joins us from time to time on these very airwaves. Matthew, thank you for the time. How you been, man?
Great, man. I love coming up to the horn as much as you love eating. I love sports, so this is a great marriage that we have here, a great occasional marriage. It's good to be here, good to be anywhere.
And we also are welcoming for the first time Adam Orman in studio. He is the co-owner of Locadoro, which is one of the top Italian restaurants, not only in Austin, but in the entire state of Texas as well. And happily able to let you folks know that Locadoro is back open as of about 6 weeks ago. It's only outdoor seating right now. But Adam, thank you for joining us in studio today. And congratulations on weathering the storm, at least up to this point, and getting the restaurant going once again.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. It is a treat to be here with Matthew. I've talked to him a lot over the last year.
I'm going to have you pull the microphone a little bit closer, if you don't mind, about a fist length away.
Here you go. I've talked to him a lot this year. And we've done so many interviews, and this is the first one where I'm actually in the same room with the person who is interviewing me. So it is a treat. And, you know, like he said, when he comes in, I think we spend way more time talking about the Astros than we do about what's on the plate. So,
all right, Matthew, what do you want to say about the Astros? Let's get this out of the way right now because we're talking food.
We can talk food. The guys on my Astros text thread, my 25 anonymous friends, would be upset if I didn't at least mention what a great season we're having, how terrible our bullpen is, and how every team in baseball cheats. And so I think that's coming to light right now, so that's fun. And maybe the Astros won't be the scapegoat for the entire MLB going forward, but I won't bet on that.
I don't know if you follow Ryan Spader on Twitter, Ace of Spader. He just went off a little bit earlier today. So if you have not seen that thread just yet, you are going to gain an extra appreciation for what everybody else has been doing since before the Astros won that World Series title.
I had a sense. I saw that he teased something was coming, and I've been too busy to look at Twitter until just now. So that will be my dessert after we get out of here.
Adam, let's start with you on the subject of COVID and just how it's affected business over the last 15 months now. When did you guys make the decision to initially shut down? Did you have it in your heads how long that might initially be? And, you know, a year later, at what point are you considering whether to open back up or whether to just shut down and try something completely different because it had been so long?
This year has been so confusing, going back to, you know, March 13th-ish last year. So we were one day ahead of the shutdown, going to a takeout model. And we did that for about a week and a half. And it was ugly. You know, no masks. We were telling people to wash their hands and not touch their faces. But we had lines. We had people just like waiting in masses outside the door for it. We weren't set up for it. So we closed, started takeout again a couple weeks after that. But that started to, you know, the state reopened very quickly and we needed to figure something else out. So we had been advocating, along with Good Work Austin, a restaurant association that we work closely with, to get contracts from the city that were going to big national catering chains to go to local restaurants, that this was going to be a way. We knew that food insecurity had increased so much during the pandemic. And we knew that local restaurants had kitchens and needed work and needed to keep their employees in place. And this was going to be a way to do that. So we started working a contract with the school district in the beginning of June last year with about seven other restaurants. And it's been my job, I feel like, this year to grow that as much as possible. So we were doing jobs with Austin Public Health and still are, the Emergency Operations Center, Department of Homeland Security. And we raised money to fund a number of those operations ourselves. So right now, we're sending about two dozen restaurants still all over the city, and we're adding new restaurants all the time to feed different apartment complexes and food pantries. So we were able to put off the decision to open for as long as possible until we felt like it was absolutely safe.
That had to be a pretty big silver lining there. And our mutual friend Brian Stubbs told me about that when he mentioned that you might be willing to join the show today, is the great work that you are doing with Good Work Austin. Just how fulfilling was it for you, even during these very tumultuous times, to be able to find something where you're able to give back to the community in such a way to so many less fortunate folks?
It's been incredibly fulfilling, and it still is now. I think the idea of just saying, oh, pandemic's over, let's start serving food again, and not still having that other work to do would be really difficult. But knowing that this is something that we want to continue, that we want restaurants to stay engaged with the community in this way, and that there are other opportunities that we have now because of the work and the relationships that we've created, makes everything else much easier.
So you're cool with rolling with the second full-time job, at least in the short term, until you can maybe figure out a way to delegate work on one side or the other?
Something like that.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Matthew, your job has obviously become a little bit different over the last year as well, and I know you're able to get back out to restaurants now, although that may also be in question considering that you have a six-week baby at home. It becomes a little bit more difficult to get out to eat with your partner. But at what point did you start to feel like you could get back into the normal flow of going out and reviewing restaurants? And really, what did your work consist of in the meantime?
Yeah, you know, I've missed dining in restaurants. I didn't go into I think the last restaurant dining room I was in was March 12th of last year, and felt weird then. And then I think the first one I was in again was the last week of March or sometime early April. I went to Uchi with some buddies for a quasi-bachelor party, and we'd all been vaccinated at that point. It was weird. The tables were really spaced out. You know, Uchi's a pretty intimate restaurant, so that was an interesting experience. But at that point, we were pretty confident about the safety of the employees and our safety just due to where the vaccine schedule was at that point. And we'd also had quite a few drinks at Garage beforehand, so I think we were pretty relaxed. But, you know, I kind of became more of a restaurant reporter and storyteller. I wouldn't say an advocate because I am a journalist. But, you know, I think the stories we were telling about people like Adam and Good Work Austin and Loco de Oro and other places, you know, made people see restaurants in a new light and understand what they provide to the community and kind of the difficult struggles they were all having staying afloat, and give a new appreciation for restaurants, which seems like it waned pretty fast given the terrible behavior I've heard about some people, customers in restaurants right now, with their ridiculous expectations of where restaurants should be. And speaking of that, you know, I'm not back to fully reviewing restaurants just yet. I've been in a few restaurants recently, and you can tell places are still getting their footing. I think people that want to be vaccinated, most people that want to be vaccinated at this point are close to getting there. But, you know, all restaurants are facing a staffing crisis in the back of house and the front of house. Dishes aren't necessarily coming out as best they can sometimes, and sometimes the server might not know how to explain the menu as well as a server could have a year and a half ago. So I think people just need to have some patience and some grace with these restaurants as they get back to full steam, as they get used to giving the kind of customer service they want to give. Because I think Adam will tell you, you know, they got into this business to give hospitality. And that's by making people feel comfortable and welcome. And it's a two-way street. And I think the customers need to do their part to help ease the flow of that relationship.
Considering that you have written a little bit about Good Work Austin, obviously Adam talked about it a little bit. Is there something he didn't mention that you think is important for people to know about with this excellent organization?
He's just such a handsome guy. No, I mean, Adam and Fiore are kind of like, you know, the Jose Andreas of Central Texas over the past couple of years. They were already working before the pandemic. They're just very forward-thinking. They're very community-driven. Chef Andreas was actually in town during the freeze and teamed with Good Work Austin to get meals out to those folks in need. And I think they've really shined a light on, especially during the, not just the pandemic, but even more so during the freeze, of how many food insecure people there are in our community, and that we have the infrastructure in place through these restaurants and through existing buildings. Like Jose said, we've got elementary schools that have these big kitchens, that we should be, you know, using the infrastructure we have in place through places like Loco de Oro and other restaurants and other community buildings to make sure that those in our community that are food insecure don't have to stay that way. And so I think Good Work Austin has shown a light on that. And as he said, they've worked with dozens of restaurants, dozens more threw in during the freeze. And, you know, that's really heartening to see during such a difficult time.
You said food insecure a couple of times there. I've never heard that term before. What does that mean?
Adam, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, it's the people who don't know where their next meal is coming from.
Okay.
And so, you know, I hope I get these numbers right. I mean, typically in Austin, there are around 12% of children that are food insecure, and that number doubled and tripled in some neighborhoods during the pandemic. And so the caregivers program that we work through the school district was in addition to the meals that the school district was providing to all of the kids who qualified for free and reduced meals, the caregivers program was providing meals for anyone with a kid. And we were, by the end, providing these, or still are now, these 14-day meal packs, so they can roll up to almost any school and get 14 meals at a time, one day a week, and get the meals for their kids at the same time. And, you know, what you find is that when you're not worried about spending the money on it, when you're not worried about where it's going to come from, you have a lot more time and headspace to do the other things that you need to do with your life, to look for a job if that's where you are, and so on and so forth. So it is not a problem that is just in the homeless community. Food insecurity is the problem of the working poor, is the problem of the elderly, and what Matthew said, you know, we are working now, when I said about other opportunities, to create nonprofit commercial kitchens where we can, where more restaurants can use less expensive spaces to provide more meals, to increase food access, and that would be able to stand up in times of crisis. So we would just be able to say, there's the place. We've been doing it all year, and now we've got another outage from heat or from cold. This location can put out 2,000 meals a day, and we've got 6 of them spread out all over the city, something like that.
What is an example of a meal that, say, goes to a kid at an elementary school?
So we're doing breakfasts and lunches for that program.
Okay.
And they're getting, you know, chicken tikka and cilantro rice. They're getting overnight oats that we make in house. They're getting a yogurt and fruit compote and some fresh granola that we make at the restaurant.
So they're getting Loco de Oro quality food.
Yeah.
At school.
Yeah. We're still using, you know, we use the same eggs that we use for customers to make our frittatas that go out. And I think that's true for most of the restaurants that are working these kinds of programs. So some of them are doing lunches and dinners. And, you know, those places are getting food from Salt and Thyme, from Shazy, from Colleen's Kitchen. You know, there are just so many restaurants that are helping out and that have been working these programs all year.
It beats the hell out of Salisbury Steak. So you said that you could wait as long as possible before opening the restaurant back up. You guys are now open in the outdoor capacity. Of course, the hot weather from the last week makes that a little bit more difficult. How much thought have you given to opening back up inside? What does that timeline look like in your head as somebody who is obviously so responsible for decisions there?
It's so hard. So, you know, all of our planning was happening in February and March to be open in and around April. And so much has changed so quickly that we're working against a couple of things. One, waiting to see what happens, which we've done all along. Mm-hmm. When we reopened last May, it was like, okay, great. Well, let's see what happens over the next month. And if things are good, then we can open in June. And of course, we know what happened. So there's still some wait and see there. The other issue is that we have the space that we have, and a lot of it is being given over to the school district program.
Okay.
And staffing. Staffing is also an issue. We want to be able to give the service and provide the food that we know we can, and don't want to be stretched thin, and don't want to invite servers back who have been going through or hire servers who have been going through the stress of this last year, and then say, oh, and now we need you to work, you know, 6 nights in a row every week because because we're understaffed. That's a recipe for disaster. One of the many recipes for disaster. And then finally, vaccinations. We just had somebody from Austin Public Health on our Good Work Austin call this morning talking about setting up restaurants as vaccination sites. And she said there's no minimum. If you only have two people that want to get vaccinated, we'll be there. But if you want to invite the community, if you want to promote this, you know, we can do that. And then we'll come back in 3 weeks and do it again. So I know that Rosedale Kitchen and Wu Chow, their group was setting themselves up was bringing Austin Public Health to their site to make sure that the rest of their employees got vaccinated. And there was definitely some interest in the rest of our community to do that and help get our numbers from where we are now. We're in like the low 50s in Travis County. Mm-hmm. And I think Williamson County is the only other county around us that's over 50%. You know, we know that our staff is fully vaccinated, but if we're inviting people into the restaurant maskless, and we know that probably half of them aren't vaccinated, we're enabling variants. We're potentially setting ourselves up to just extend this till we all need our booster shots. And you know, I would much rather be in a safer place before we have to make that decision.
As far as hiring employees goes, obviously this was a big issue with the presidential election from last year, the idea of $15 minimum wage. You written about it recently. You had a February blog post at locadoroaustin.com where you talked about raising the wage for reopening. Are we starting to see the tide turn, guys, a little bit with regards to restaurants actually paying their servers more than that nominal $2.15 or whatever it is nowadays fee in order to have them come in and maybe offering up some of those benefits as well?
Yes and no. You know, I have had more conversations about it with more restaurants from around the country in the last year than we had in the previous 5 years. And we have already seen some of the places I just mentioned: Salt and Thyme, Colleen's, Dai Due, Texas French Bread, Thai Fresh, Black Star. There are more restaurants now that have added that feature to how they treat their employees. Bolden Creek Coffee House. I'm really sorry. I want to make sure I don't miss anybody because it's really exciting and there's a lot of different ways to do it. But the important thing is to get away from 213. That when folks have to depend on tips, they are subject to so much more sexual harassment than in any other industry. The restaurant industry gets more complaints from the equal employment from the EEOC than any other. To the EEOC, rather. And we know that most of them are unreported. So because you're dependent on your managers and the cooks and your colleagues to give you the shift that you need, give you the section that you need, get your food out on time. And then, of course, you're also dependent on the customers. If you're only making $2.13 an hour, a lot of folks at Locadoro are going to be making more than that anyway. But there are plenty of other people in the restaurant industry who are not and who it would then be up to them to sue their restaurant to get those back wages. And that's an unequal power dynamic, right?
Yeah.
So yes, I think that there have been great conversations about equity, about where race interacts with tipping. There's also a lot of evidence.
What do you mean by that?
I was just going to go into that. Where okay. there have been studies that show that tipping depends much less on the quality of service than it does on the race and sex of your server. So
oh, wow.
White men, you can kind of go down the line. White men make the most, then black men, then white women, then black and then BIPOC women make the lowest percentage of tips. After all the conversations that we had last summer and even before the murder of George Floyd, we didn't want to be a part of that construct. We wanted to make sure that our servers were being treated like professionals, that they had a consistent, predictable wage. We still accept tips, but we also have a service charge.
What is the minimum?
The service charge is 20%, and it gets distributed to the entire staff, dishwashers, cooks, bartenders, to bring everybody up to somewhere between $15 and $20 an hour.
Which also ensures that servers aren't squeezing some of their coworkers that are in the back of the kitchen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And
what's the law these days on people being able to tip out back of house? Wasn't that illegal depending on the wage structure?
It's state to state, and
this is fresh air.
Yeah. And I don't remember. I know a lot changed in 2018 when there was a budget. We're going to get way more in the weeds than you want to be on this tray.
That's fine.
This is like comparing spider tack to Lester Hayes. What did he used to use on the Raiders in the early 80s?
Stick'em.
Yeah. What are the real differences between spider tack and stick'em?
But it makes hiring hard, right? I mean, it'll get tricky because, you know, servers like making a whole lot of money being in the front of the house, and people in the back of the house wish their wages were higher. So I would imagine it's tricky calculus figuring out how you make it equitable for everybody and how you incentivize everybody and how you keep everybody happy. So, you know, kudos to those restaurants that are figuring that out.
Curious about what both you guys do with your, when you go out to a restaurant and you are required to put a tip down on the receipt when you're done, you pay for your meal or whatever. I tend to start, the low point for me is 20%, and that's bare minimum. And it goes up pretty quickly from there. I'll usually end up somewhere around 30% if I really appreciate the service that was provided for me. What is you guys' starting point? What's the typical tip that you offer up at the end of a bill? Matthew, let's start with you on this one.
I mean, I bet Adam doesn't get the chance to eat out at all.
True.
You know, and I don't want to have a bad reputation around town if I don't tip well enough. But like you said, it's always 20% to start, and usually 25%, sometimes up to 35%. But, you know, it's been higher probably during the pandemic because people are putting their livelihoods and lives on the line to be out there serving people. And, you know, I've been fortunate to have mostly, I was furloughed for a while myself, but I've been fortunate for the most part to have my job and to have health insurance and to not worry about some of the things these folks worry about. So, yeah, like you said, it's always at least 20%. It's usually around 25% and up to 30%. And I've just got a weird thing with numbers. So I also just always have to add certain numbers in. So sometimes my superstition around numbers will make it go much higher than I'd like it to, but usually never lower.
Okay.
That's a whole nother show. Yeah, I start at 20%.
Okay.
And that's usually around where we land, depending. It's just important to know, and tip on the whole thing.
You tip on the whole thing. So some people tip. Okay, you buy a $50 bottle of wine. Are you tipping $10? I mean, I do.
So here's
the conversation.
There's such an easy way to have this conversation. This is why tipping is ridiculous.
Exactly.
It is not fair that there is somebody who is depending on us making these calculations to pay their rent. And you do the same thing in cabs or in nail salons. Like, well, they own the place, so maybe I don't really need to tip because all the money that I'm paying them is going to them anyway. It should be a tip. It should be an extra. It should be. But we should know that all of the people who are serving us when we go to a restaurant are already making a living wage, so that when we tip them, we're doing just that. We're leaving a tip.
And then you do away with snarky people saying, well, there's not a tip jar at my office.
Two totally different beasts there. Now, I will say this. I'm not going to throw the restaurant under the bus because we literally spend more money there as a family than I think any place else.
Wendy's.
But at one point, yes, we were going to Wendy's this summer. And originally, when you would order online, they had the tip button where you could do 10, 15, 20, 25%, whatever, custom tip. And the first time I realized that they no longer had that button, I had bought the $50 bottle of wine, and they had just included the 20% tip. And I'm like,
Wow, auto.
I'm like, all right, auto 20% on that. I'm like, you know what? We love these folks. If this is going to help them out just a little bit, I'm good with it
Which Wendy's has $50 bottles of wine?
The one on the drag.
Yeah.
The one at Westlake. We're doing a food and restaurant roundtable right now with Matthew Odom of The Statesman. He is the food editor for The Statesman. And also Adam Orman. He's the co-owner of Locadoro. Coming up next, we will get more into the food side of things, I promise you. That was an important part of the conversation to have, though. You're listening to Shirts and Skins. Chad Hastings on vacation on the Horn. on Shirts and Skins. Chad Hastings on vacation and the rest of this week. Spending this hour talking about the food and restaurant business here in Austin with a couple of pros. Matthew Odom, the food editor. Food editor is the correct title for you, right?
It would be restaurant critic and reporter. I think my actual editor might take umbrage.
My apologies. Restaurant critic and reporter for The Statesman. And then also Adam Orman. He's the co-owner of Locadoro. We're going to talk a little bit more about food in this section, guys. And Adam, let's start with your restaurant. I took a look at the menu just before today's show, and I have to admit, it's probably been a couple of years since I've eaten there, but the menu looked really good. Is it scaled down at all, or are you guys trying to ramp back up to what the normal production is with regards to what you're serving folks who are eating on site?
We have a smaller menu now. We have less than half the seating,
okay,
and we're only open four nights right now.
You want to make sure to maintain that consistency,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so we are, and the way that we produce, we make everything in-house. We make all our own, we make all the pasta, all the bread, all the fresh cheeses. We cure all our own meats.
Forge the silverware.
No, just the important stuff.
Oh, okay, my bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Somewhere else.
You know, it is important that we have a smaller menu for fewer customers so that we're not, because we just can't, we don't like wasting food.
I get that. And Matthew, for you, it's been a little bit difficult this last year. Not a whole lot of places opening, probably wisely by them. But what are some of the places that have been your go-tos for takeout food over this last year? I think we all have those at this point, even as we start getting back into that normal flow.
Yeah, you know, there is a... I've been going to more trailers because they just make for really for handy takeout.
Yeah.
There's some new ones around. There's one, I don't know if... you know that right here, y'all have got two of the best food trailers around.
Just the pizza place right over here?
Yeah, Samataro right here.
I haven't been there yet. Is it good?
Oh, my gosh.
Neapolitan pies?
No, it's kind of a new... it's kind of a hybrid, and it's kind of its own thing.
Okay.
It is... I mean, I don't want to, like, break news or start ranking things on somebody else's medium, but it...
Please do. We do it all the time.
I mean, I think it's probably the best pizza in Austin right now.
Wow. That is a big statement.
There's not a huge variety. One of the guys who used to work at Roberta's, I think, helped consult on it. The guy that opened it is not like old pizzioli. Like he's not a dude that's been around the pizza world for a long time. He just had a love for pizza. So it's kind of crazy how there's not a massive backstory to it. Just dudes that love pizza that got some help from some friends, and they have a really great oven and they use really good ingredients and they just make fabulous pizza. And it's right here off Lost Creek Boulevard. I think that would be the name of that street.
Yeah, it's literally in the back of our parking lot.
Oh, is that this backs up to there, doesn't
yeah.
it? Well, I know what I'm getting when I leave here. I'm not sure when they open. I think they do lunch, or maybe that's only on the weekends.
What's the other place though?
And then right next to it, and on the spot, I'm choking, Thai Cruefa is a Thai trailer. I know you've lived here long enough to remember Thai Passion was downtown on 6th and Congress for years. So there was a woman who worked there who, after she moved here from Thailand, she worked there for a decade, I think. And then she opened this Thai Cruefa trailer on East 11th over in Kenny Dorham's backyard. And she had a friend who went to this Muay Thai gym that used to be right back here that's, you know, still some kind of a gym, and he said you gotta move your trailer over there, and so she did. And so it's Thai Cruefa, Samataro pizza, and then there's some kind of Woody's shaved ice that uses kind of a cream base thing that they pour over the ice, so it's kind of a creamy, frothy shaved ice situation.
Wow.
So if you pick the right one, that's good. I've had mixed results, but I've had some really good ones. They use fresh juice. It doesn't taste very artificial, so that's super nice and refreshing, especially right now. So I've hit those places up. You know, trailers are used to doing takeout, and so they were really reliable. I've been doing some outdoor eating at Holdout Brewing, which is the sibling of Better Half right there on 5th Street, just west of Lamar. They do great bar food, buffalo wings. They do a great grilled chicken burger. They do some nice sandwiches. They do a good cheeseburger.
They bring the cauliflower tots over?
No, the cauliflower tots you can stare at longingly from across the courtyard. I don't think they have those at the brewery. They have really good beer, though. Mm. And another great place is Distant Relatives, which is Chef Damian Brockway. He was the chef at Counter 357, which was a very upscale prefix restaurant downtown above Swift's Attic for several years. He was the chef there. Before that, he'd been at Key, and before that, Uchiko. So he has a career in fine dining. He's a black chef from New England, decided over the summer that he was finally ready to make the move to start cooking food that was more soulful to him and true to his experience. And he started tracing the foodways of the African diaspora as it made its way to the islands and to the southeast parts of America and into Texas. And it's, for lack of a better word, it's a barbecue trailer, but there's a lot more going on than that. And he had resisted smoking brisket, but I think he's finally doing brisket. But he was doing these smoked beef chuck sandwiches with pimento cheese.
Oh my gosh.
That might be the best thing I've eaten.
And where is this?
And that is on East 6th Street over by Lyle's Tire Shop. So all the way at East 6th Street, yeah. Almost to 183 there in the airport. He does really amazing side dishes as well. He does this sweet potato mousse that's pretty much like dessert. It's like a brown butter sweet potato mousse that's really good. And so that's been really cool to see some chefs doing different things. You know, people have pivoted during this time and kind of taken their careers into their own hands without needing much financial backing or partners and wisely doing trailers during this time. There's also a chef that was at Pitchfork Pretty, Max Snyder. Pitchfork Pretty was my number two restaurant, I think, 2 years in a row. It closed indefinitely. It's still closed. And Max went and opened a vegetable-forward trailer called Rogue Radish, which was over in the old Eastside Cafe parking lot, and now it is in the parking lot, I believe, of the old Pitchfork Pretty on East Cesar Chavez. So he does these grain bowls, and he spends a lot of time, you know, great sourcing, fermentation. You can add some grilled goat loin to it, so it's not just vegetable if you want to meat it up a little bit. But he used to work at 11 Madison Park, which is one of the best restaurants in the country. Yeah. He's an incredibly skillful chef with a great palate, nice technique. He just has a really good sense of building flavor. And so it sounds simple, just a grain bowl, but it's fantastic. And that's one of my favorite dishes in town right now as well.
Not to change the subject, because I didn't want to get your answer on this as well, Adam. What do you think about 11 Madison Park going totally meatless, Matthew?
I mean, I think it's fascinating. I don't know if it's something that's going to trickle down throughout the country. I don't think you're going to see that happening in Omaha, Nebraska. But, you know, the fact that Max is doing it here in Austin with his trailer, he is, again, offering grilled goat loin, which he had offered at Pitchfork as a side. But it's, you know, it's the responsible thing to do for the environment. It's hard to be sustainable when you're sourcing as much meat as we eat in the United States. You know, whatever you think your ethics are on eating animals is one thing, but it's kind of inarguable what the strain is that we're putting on the environment with our diets. And so I think it's a very noble thing to do. I think it's something they can afford to do. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, what do you think, Adam, from an operator standpoint?
I mean, I'll step in and be a little bit more of a jerk too. Then you know, it's important that when you talk about the strain, like our meat consumption adds more carbon. Adds more carbon emissions than our fleet of vehicles.
Oh, watch the texts that come in on this one.
Yeah, I know, and I am not a vegetarian. And we have meat, and you know, we have meat at Locadoro. But it is like you said, inarguable that if we changed our diet and not making everybody in America become a vegan, but if we were just honest about it and admitted that this was a thing, we could reduce carbon emissions by much less than changing our entire fleet to electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. So it's something to know. Nobody's stealing your hamburgers. We are not going to, you know, Texas brisket isn't going anywhere, and I don't want it to.
You can only eat electric cars now. Is that what you're saying? tell the audience what you're
that
saying.
That is the takeaway. I think it's gaining footing. I mean, I think the idea of having more vegetarian, more vegetable options, more vegetable forward menus, smaller meat portions is gaining traction for a number of reasons. I think around health and some of the diets that have been that have come out and that have been popular the last couple of years because of climate change, and also cost. You know, if restaurants are, the amount that we're allowed to charge has not changed that much in the 25 years that I've been doing this, but the amount of everything else has gone up.
And let's, I mean, and honestly, to, you know, let's be fair, almost any idiot can make a cheeseburger taste good, but it takes some talent to make certain vegetable dishes taste good. And Max is one of those chefs that does
That's a good point.
I mean, you eat that grain bowl and you're like, I mean, I told people, like, this is one of my favorite bites in the city. And they're like, it's a grain bowl? And I was like, just trust me. I mean, anybody can throw a steak on a grill, but it really shows some talent. I mean, and it is. Look, it's easy to also roast vegetables. We have all been doing it at home during the pandemic, and those taste great as well. But it's just something exciting when you get a vegetarian dish that's executed well and brings out flavors that you weren't expecting, using whether it's a technique or a certain vinegar or whatever it is. And not everybody can do that. So, yeah, if everybody could make vegetable dishes taste like Rogue Radish did, then there'd probably be fewer complaints about people coming for your cows.
Yeah, what you want to hear when we serve. I mean, we have a green bean dish on the menu that I love.
Chilled green beans. I saw that. I don't think I've ever had chilled green beans before.
And it's it has some fermented. It has a saffron aioli, and it does have a little bit of our house cured capicola. But just a touch. And, you know, you hear people say, I never knew green beans could taste like this.
Why don't you go back to California?
there's meat. And the same was we had a carrots on our old on
the, oh, yeah,
on,
those
before
are so good.
With pistachio butter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just get people who say, I don't even like carrots that much. But and that's so gratifying because, like you said, I mean, a steak, a cheeseburger, these are wonderful things. But when a diner says something so unexpected about a dish that's as simple as the green beans or the carrots, you know, I feel really good about telling the kitchen, going back and telling the kitchen that and letting them know that their hard work in making this simple ingredient, in elevating this really simple ingredient has worked.
He is Adam Orman, co-owner of Locadoro, also joined by Matthew Odom, the food critic and reporter for the Austin American Statesman. Coming up, one more segment here on Shirts and Skins. It's the food and restaurant edition right here on the Horn. Final segment of today, Shirts and Skins. Chad Hastings on vacation. I am joined in studio this hour by Adam Orman, co-owner of Locadoro. Also Matthew Odom. He is the Statesman restaurant critic and reviewer. One more segment here, guys. Real quick, I did want to get your takeout spots, Adam, that have really been a godsend for you over the last 15 months. What are the places you've gotten that quick meal from?
Italy, up 1-0, you see? Italy up one.
Oh yeah, I'm mostly
listeners
watching.
Are going to want to know about your
watching soccer. Yeah, I mean vegetarianism and soccer, right? We've totally put the targets
the
on our backs now.
Flip the script.
Smash that subscribe button, y'all.
There is a place. I live up kind of northwest, and there's a little taco truck called Sopa de Fideo that just opened up a little bit ago.
Where northwest?
It is off of 183. Near the Arboretum. It's kind of tucked into a little food court behind the Randalls.
Say
the
name one more time, please.
Sopa de Fideo.
Okay.
And Sopa de Fideo is a traditional South American dish that's a broth, that's a meat broth with little kind of broken vermicelli noodles, which are called fideo.
Wow.
And she does hers. So any taco you get comes with a little cup of the soup, and which, you know, may not sound that great today. It's 99 degrees, but you know, it actually is. It's still it's really satisfying. She makes her own chalupa shells, and she has here it is again, vegetarian. She has
told you not to read that text line.
Man, their vegetarian tostadas have a really nice avocado puree and roasted broccoli and carrots. And I mean, there's some work and some thought given to the vegetarian chalupas. But then she also does biscuits and like these kind of hybrid Tex-Mex biscuit breakfast bonanzas. And waffles and tortas. So there is, you know, the gut busting and everything is made there, you know, and it's her and her mom. And she's recognized me every time I've gone, and it's just really nice. It's nice to be like a regular at a truck. That's not what you don't expect to have that kind of service or to have that kind of relationship. Man, where else?
That's gonna be it for today.
Oh,
I'm gonna have to have you guys back
shout
in
out Aaron
to
Barons.
Talk a little bit more about that. That's right, the Midnight Stroll. I need to give a shout out also to Levant. That's been my go-to spot over the last year in Cedar Park. Best food in Cedar Park, bar none.
Levant?
Levant's Mediterranean Grill. It's all about the Levant region. It includes Israel, Jordan, Syria as well. Thank you to everybody for listening today. Thank you guys for joining me for this roundtable. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. This is a treat.
Triple Option with RBKD is coming up next. In the meantime, I'm Trey Elling. This is Shirts and Skins. Chad Hastings on the rest of the week, but we'll be back tomorrow. Have yourselves a great afternoon, and hook 'em.